From the City of Angels off the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Later tonight, those open lines. And at the end of the show tonight, a special tribute to the late Coast to Coast guest, Dr. Fred Bell, who passed away recently. Here's what's happening. A listeria outbreak caused by tainted cantaloupes, a story we've been following now for some time, has killed 15. It used to be 16. They've reduced that number. 15 in the United States and infected 84 people. So far, the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention said now 19 states have reported infections from one of the four strains of listeria involved in this outbreak. Of the 15 deaths, 5 in New Mexico, 3 in Colorado, 2 in Texas, and there was one each in Kansas, Maryland, Missouri, Nebraska, and Oklahoma. And the California-based True Leaf Farms recalling 90 cartons of chopped romaine lettuce as it may be contaminated with listeria, though no related illnesses have been reported. This is getting way too much. There's no connection, they say, between the lettuce recall and the outbreak tied to cantaloupes. Flooding from Tropical Storm Irene appears to have spawned a new wave of particularly aggressive mosquitoes in Vermont, keeping the threat of a potentially fatal disease alive well into the fall, according to its state health officials. Mosquitoes can carry eastern equine encephalitis. As we reported last night while we were on the air, in a devastating double blow to Al-Qaeda's most dangerous franchise, U.S. counterterrorism forces killed 2 American citizens who played key roles in inspiring attacks against the U.S. U.S.-born cleric Anwar al-Lawaki and Samir Khan, who edited a jihadist internet magazine, were killed in an airstrike on the convoy in Yemen by a joint CIA-U.S. military operation. After 3 weeks of tracking the targets, U.S. armed drones and fighter jets shadowed the Al-Qaeda convoy before armed drones launched their lethal strike early Friday. The strike killed 4 operatives in all. Douglas Hagman watching and monitoring terrorists all over the planet. Doug, mixed feelings here. First of all, I'm glad they got him, but he hadn't been charged with anything. It's caused some problems. Ron Paul says, you know, this was an assassination. What's your take?
Well, exactly. And you know, the entire situation about assassinating an American citizen without due process, of course, you know, it's a very severe sanction, the most severe sanction one could possibly endure. And it's my understanding, too, al-Awlaki's father has already submitted a lawsuit against the United States. But those circumstances notwithstanding, George, I've got an extremely interesting backstory to this.
Okay, go ahead.
That we obtained directly today from our intelligence sources. I've yet to hear this reported anywhere in the media. And just briefly, exactly how he was identified and killed by a drone strike, which I think is unprecedented. In early January of this year, intelligence officials first learned that al-Awlaki had an ex-wife living in Ireland, of all places. And she provided, she proved to be quite cooperative and provided several telephone numbers of his contacts in Yemen. And it was with those numbers that the TSA was able to triangulate the telephones that he was using, because he would always travel in convoys in Yemen to prevent U.S. drones from attacking him, because he knew what was going on.
Sure.
But it was during one of those transports from one hideout to another that he was on the phone with one of the numbers supplied by the ex-wife. They were able, the NSA was able to identify the exact vehicle he was in, and the drones, using facial recognition on board, were able to positively identify him using that software or
amazing technology.
Yeah, exactly. And of course, not only did we get him, and we got the editor of Inspire magazine, and this is a big blow to the West, at least to the English speaking would be terrorists that really soak up the al-Awlaki. So, I do understand, and I disagree with the policy of, who's to say next? Who's next for assassination? That's really a slippery slope.
Well, one of the problems, I guess, Doug, is you have to have confidence in your either elected officials, in this case, President Obama, who called the shots on this, and the CIA to take out people who we know are terrorists, who know that they want to kill Americans and men and women and children and, you know, truly don't deserve to be alive on this planet. You have to have confidence that those people are going to do the right thing for you. The problem is with something like this is what happens if you get the wrong person in who says, you know what, I don't like what Doug Hagman says on that radio show of Coast to Coast. Let's take him out. And that's the danger.
And I totally agree with that. And that's something that I think, boy, smarter men than I, of course, would have to really consider. Because, indeed, it's a slippery slope, and it, especially being an American citizen, you are denied due process. So I think this is going to be litigated at the highest levels of court.
I wish, Doug, that we had been this tough before 9/11 with some of these people.
Especially knowing that in the 90s that this technology was available and growing to us. Indeed,
yep.
I do too.
Yep. All right. Thanks. Doug Hagman. His website, of course, part of our Twitter feed at coasttocoastam.com. One of the world's most powerful atom smashers at the leading edge of scientific discovery for a quarter of a century has been shut down. They ran out of money. The Tevatron facility near Chicago fired its last particle beam today. That leaves just the Large Hadron Collider at CERN in Switzerland to do this. The world was gripped by the NASA satellite that fell back to Earth last Saturday. And now there's another one plummeting back from orbit. In late October, early November now, a German astronomy satellite will plunge uncontrolled back to Earth. Now, while slightly smaller than the NASA satellite, the German one is expected to have more pieces survive reentry, they say, estimating that there is a 1 in 2,000 chance of it hitting someone. We had the 1 in 3,200 chance with the NASA satellite. The German satellite was launched in 1990, died in 1980, weighs 2.5 tons. The German Space Agency estimates that 30 pieces weighing less than 2 tons will survive reentry. Debris may include sharp mirror-type shards that can slice right through you. The German Space Agency puts the odds of somebody somewhere on Earth being hurt by the satellite again, 1 in 2,000. Sunspot 1302, quiet now for 3 days, still has the potential for an X-flare. NOAA forecasters continue to estimate a 30% chance of such eruptions. James McCanney, he watches the skies. 30% chance. I can live with that, Jim. How about you?
It's pretty low, and right now the auroral situation on the Earth is pretty calm on our side. But tonight is actually, George, a pretty exciting night for the sun. Just as I was looking up and doing my homework for the show, there's a comet heading directly towards the sun right now. And so it should hit it in about 12 hours.
Wow. Now, what's that going to do? Anything?
Well, from past experience, they can kick off CMEs. So we have, like you say, Sunspot 1302 becoming less active. But this comet, of course, NASA scientists don't believe in such things, but we've seen hundreds of comets coming into the sun that snap out big CMEs. So this could be the sleeping giant, so to speak, something that was unexpected. Like I say, it just showed up on the SOHO cameras just a couple hours ago.
All right. Thanks for being so timely for us. Jim's website, by the way, jmcanneyscience.com. So you've heard astrologers on this program before, but you haven't heard Mitchell Lewis. Stand by. He's next on Coast to Coast AM. Mitchell Scott Lewis, renowned financial astrologer, author of Murder in the 11th House, has been practicing astrology, been a teacher in New York City for more than 20 years. For 12 years, he worked on the Mercantile Exchange, successfully predicted just a number of major financial events, including the subprime mortgage collapse, the stock crash of 08, the current recession. His clientele includes leading financiers, health professionals, and folks from all over the place. And here he is on Coast to Coast. Mitchell, how are you?
Hello, George. Nice to talk to you.
My pleasure, too. Now, this is different. An astrologer who also is an expert in the financial end, this must work great for you.
It came about really from a rather strange place because I'm a musician by trade and an astrologer. And was kind of dragged onto the floor of the exchange by some of my clients many years ago and found that I have a knack for it. And that astrology, as you well know, is an amazing science. And when used properly in the financial markets, it's just remarkable. Some of the things that I've been able to predict, and other astrologers as well, but from my own experience, I mean, it's just truly amazing, George. And when the more work I do in it, the more it's exciting to me.
How do you tie the two together, Mitchell? For example, you know, as you predicted stock market crashes and things like that.
Right.
How do you predict with astrology that that's going to happen to the stock market?
Well, first of all, I look back. I do a great deal of homework. Any good astrologer has to do a lot of work. We were called readers because we read a lot, and not just charts, but we have to read books. And when I was brought on the floor of the exchange, I was looking for recurring events. There's a group called SIRE. I don't know if you're familiar with them. The Society for the Investigation of Recurring Events.
Yes.
And they sponsored a series of lectures that I did for about 10 years at the Princeton Club. And one of the first predictions that I made for them was that oil, which was trading $32 a barrel at the time, was going to hit $100 a barrel as Pluto transited through Sagittarius. Pluto rules things that are buried and dead things. Therefore, it came to my consciousness that it probably rules oil. And as I went back and did the homework, looking at what Pluto transits did to the oil market, I found the correlation I was looking for. As Pluto entered Sagittarius, which is the biggest sign, the sign of growth and expansion, ruled by Jupiter, the biggest planet, I said, this thing is going to explode. In the first lecture, of course, they laughed. The second time I lectured there, it was trading $50 a barrel. The place was full. The third time, it was in the 70s, and they couldn't find a room big enough to fit the people in. So, you know. And then when it hit $100 a barrel, of course, I got all the kudos and the accolades, and aren't I wonderful. It's astrology that's wonderful. You should be able to read it, but, you know, that takes a great deal of work, but it's amazing. And with the stock market crashes, again, I went back and did the history of the Dow. I like to work with, actually, the New York Stock Exchange chart because it's the granddaddy of all of them.
Right, yeah, there's good data there, isn't there?
Oh, it's wonderful. And with the Buttonwood, you know, they started trading it on a particular day on, what was it, March, May 17th, 1792. I have a 10 a.m. time, which I rectified. So I went back and I took a look and I found that, well, lo and behold, the Dow goes up or the stocks go up about 75% of the time. The only time that they go off for the year is when Saturn is afflicted to one of the outer planets. I said, it can't be that simple. So I continued to do more and more work on it, and I found that, in fact, it's that simple. It's not easy to understand astrology. It's not easy to understand the financial markets. But if you do the homework, you'll find the correlations you want. So I saw that Saturn is opposing Uranus in the sky on Election Day 2008, which is why I predicted that there would be a Democrat elected. I didn't know who it was at the time, but whoever was on the Democratic ticket was going to be elected because there's a reversal in power. Saturn represents stability, foundation, structure. Uranus is just the opposite. It wants nothing to do with that. When the two are in conflict to each other, ultimately something has to give, and what gives is Saturn. So in the New York Stock Exchange's chart, that aspect fell at 18 degrees Pisces and Virgo, and New York Stock Exchange's Mars is at 18 degrees Virgo. Sure enough, we had a crash within days of that time, and I predicted it well in advance, more than a year in advance.
These astrological events, Mitchell, are geared to things that happen, but they're controlled, of course. Their destinies are controlled by people. Do you look at that too? Do you factor in when you do your astrology, you figure, all right, the mindset of people will probably do this, hence the market may crash or this could happen?
Well, you have to take into account whether you're doing an individual's chart, a country's chart, or the stock market's chart, where the entity is at the time. There is free will in astrology. You know, I have clients who have an aspect, and I'll have two clients with the same aspect. One of them will come through it with flying colors. The other one will get crushed by it. It has to do with the life choices they've made. If they're not taking care of their health and Saturn sitting on top of Venus, they're going to have trouble with their kidneys or their lower back. If it's the moon, it'll be the stomach or the breasts or the esophagus that gets affected.
And that's almost universal, I would assume.
It is universal, absolutely. I, you know, and I do a great deal of health astrology, too. It's one of my specialties because the correlation, I think each astrologer has their knack, whatever they're particularly good at. And I have a few things that that fit well with my personality and with who I am, and so they come to me easily. When I look at the New York Stock Exchange's chart and I see Saturn and Uranus opposed and sitting on top of Mars, ruler of the 10th house of career, it says to me this entity, whether it's a person or a country or whatever it is in very bad shape. And then you look at the stocks and you realize, well, they're trading 14,000 when we are on the precipice of a recession that nobody wants to admit to. And sure enough, right before Election Day, boom, we get a crash.
Yeah.
And the second time I made the same prediction for February, when Neptune sat on top of the New York Stock Exchange's Pluto, we had the second crash, February into March. It works, George. It works. Astrology works, and it works brilliantly if you pay attention, if you're studying it, of course. But you can't just pay attention to the astrology, like you said. You have to see what's going on around the situation. Right now, of course, we're sitting in a mess. I mean, America's in just a terrible mess. And everybody wants to know, when's it going to get better?
Of course, yeah. And can you tell them that?
I can. I hope to do that tonight.
All right.
I'll tell you one thing. The last time we had Saturn opposed Uranus was 1965 to 67. It was followed by a 16-year bear market. The stocks tried to rally. They rallied up three times and made a marginal new high twice during that period, only to collapse again and again. And when this happened, I predicted pretty much the same thing. And now we're dealing with Pluto in square to Uranus in the sky, a very powerful configuration. Pluto rules plutonium. Uranus rules explosive situations. I was on a TV show, and the producers, for some reason, cut off my predictions at the end of the show when they sent out the link. I think they were a little afraid that they might be a little too much. But I predicted that there would be nuclear incidences, not necessarily bombs, but there would be nuclear incidences, and that there would be that was right before the Japanese situation. It was
a nuclear incident, no doubt.
It certainly was. And we're also going to have, for lack of a better term, martial law declared at some point. There's going to be so much animosity. Well, there already is. The Wall Street thing that's going on right now is a very small revolution compared to what we saw in the 60s and whatnot, but it's building. And if the Republicans win the White House in 2012, which is a very big possibility, I won't know until I see who's running and I can do a comparison.
Well, and one of my questions for you tonight, Mitchell, is will we have an election in 2012 or will it be suspended?
No, I don't think it'll be suspended. I think what's going to happen is that the claws are going to come out. The Republican Party simply has no... It's not even a party anymore. It's some sort of a bizarre animus that is taken over, and the American public simply isn't going to take it for too much longer. We were able to avoid a revolution in the 1930s because FDR was voted in. Had he not been voted in, there would have been a revolution in this country.
There's been some talk, for example, that the president may not run for re-election. I think he will. Do you look at that?
I try to look at everything. We run out of time and whatnot, and you can overthink these things sometimes. But if Obama doesn't run, the Democrats are dead in the water. They have to run their incumbent. I can't imagine that they won't. However, there is a small possibility that they will challenge him at the convention. I can't imagine.
All right,
who would
that's
run.
Interesting. He may adjust. I mean, I don't see him keeping Joe Biden.
That's a possibility. There's going to be some changes made. Well, his whole team has to change. Look, he was a very young man when he came into this job. He did not have the experience.
Well, as this does to everybody, you go out a very old man, don't you?
Yes, I know. The times make the man. Well, I tell you what we're really dealing with, George. In 1930, they discovered Pluto. Just in time for Roosevelt to enact things that are ruled by the planet Pluto, which includes anything that's held jointly together, such as a pension or Social Security or unemployment benefits, anything that is, so-called entitlement. And in 2006, they deplanetized Pluto. Our society, the collective, turned away from the concepts of helping.
All right, that's an interesting. Hold on for a second, Mitchell. I want to talk with you about that. So Pluto did its thing, and now it's not a planet anymore. And what does that mean for all these things? We'll be back. Well, we'll take your phone calls with the astrologer Mitchell Lewis next hour right here on Coast to Coast AM. Hey, by the way, how would you like to download 1,000 programs for less than 25 cents a day? Yep, you can do all that if you're a Coast Insider, a member of the club. Simply go to coasttocoastam.com and sign up to become a Coast Insider. And welcome back. We're with astrologer Mitchell Lewis. Of course, he's written a book called Murder in the 11th House. We'll talk about that a little bit later on in the program. Mitchell, so Pluto was once a planet and all these things happen and then they take it away. It's now a planetoid. What does that do to astrology?
Well, it's not what it does to astrology. If Pluto hits your moon, believe me, you'll feel it whether you want to call it a planet or not. what happens is for thousands of years, the only planets that we saw were up to Saturn, okay? And then in 1760, I think, Uranus gets discovered just in time for the so-called Age of Enlightenment.
Okay.
For the invention and for Ben Franklin to put a key on the end of the kite. Electricity is ruled by Uranus. In fact, he invents the lightning rod after Uranus is discovered.
Interesting.
Government of and by the people is a Uranus discovery, and it did not exist until that planet was discovered. America and then France. Sure, in ancient Athens, they had, 12 citizens who voted and 2,000 slaves, but this is the first time we've had this kind of government, and that one was when Uranus was discovered, because the discovery of a new planet raises the consciousness of the species. Then Neptune gets discovered in the 1800s, and seances become very important, and more important, Neptune rules medicine.
Mm-hmm.
And the advances in medicine, especially since the Civil War, as a result of the wars more than anything else, explode. And we discover all kinds of new things, and our consciousness rises. Then in 1930, we discover Pluto, and our consciousness rises again, and FDR institutes all of these wonderful programs to give us a sense of security. And now they are devolution,
basically. They're taking them away.
Exactly. And we are literally allowing this as a collective. And that's why the Tea Party and the rest of these people exist now, because the consciousness of the whole species has shrunk as a result of greed, bankers, the whole thing that we've just been through.
Sure.
So what do? They want to get rid of everything that Pluto represents. The only way they can do that is by deplanetizing Pluto. I have a couple of articles on the website about that, and I find this to be a fascinating moment in human history.
But you don't think they're sitting back going, we're going to declassify Pluto as a planet, and hence all these things will be taken away?
Well, they're trying.
I mean, do they try to put the two and two together?
No, I don't think they have any idea.
No.
I think it's a matter of unconsciousness. But you'd be amazed at how many people and the kinds of people who use astrology. I mean, some of the people that I have as clients, I would never mention their names, but, are you're just amazed. And some of them, you say, this person believes in astrology, and they do, very much so. It's not a political thing. Astrology, first of all, during the Second World War, both the Germans and the English used astrological things and Nostradamus predictions to, counter each other's. It almost doesn't matter. Astrology has no politics. It has no sense of anything. It simply is how everything is connected to everything else. And when you have the collective, wanting to sort of get rid of the entitlement programs, do away with all of this, tell you to go to your local church and beg for charity rather than get, your share of the fair, the pot that we're all sharing, that's Pluto. And the deplanetization of it did not happen because these people are astrologers and they said, aha, we're going to do it. It was just the opposite. It's that they deplanetized Pluto as a result of, we just don't think it's a planet anymore. Happens to coincide with taking away most of what Pluto rules. It's classic. It's a classic example of how astrology works and how the collective is ruled by it without even realizing.
That's interesting. Now, what do you mean by the void of course moon? What is that?
Well, the moon goes through each sign. It takes 2.5 days to go through each sign. When the moon has made its last major, what we call Ptolemic aspects, named after Claudius Ptolemy, before it goes into the next sign, it is void of course. It is not connected. The emotions aren't connected. Things don't seem to work out the way that you hoped they would. And Obama was inaugurated on a void of course moon. And when I saw that that was happening, remember he took the oath of office like 3 times or something?
Yeah, they screwed up something and they had to redo it. Yeah.
Right. You can't screw with fate. At noon on that day, he became president, whether he took the oath of office or not. That's by the law. It didn't matter whether he put his hand up and said, I am the guy. So the void of course moon took effect. There were 4 other presidents elected on the void, inaugurated on a void of course moons. FDR's last term, John Kennedy, Nixon's last term, and Clinton's last term. 2 of them died in office, 1 was thrown out of office, and Clinton was impeached.
Yeah, and almost thrown out of office.
Right. That's the result of being inaugurated on a void of course moon. Then Obama comes in on his void of course moon. He puts all of his efforts into the health care, which is a wonderful thing, but, you know, who knows, the economy was collapsing. Point is, no matter what he did, from my point of view, from an astrological point of view, it would have turned out to be void of course. A lot of JFK's programs were never completed by him. They were completed by Johnson. In fact, Johnson came in, a completely different person than he left the White House. He did more for the common man than anybody since FDR. He brought the second group of entitlement programs in under the Saturn-Uranus opposition. We needed to change the distribution of the wealth the same way that we're doing it now. The stock market had to crash now. It couldn't keep going up. First of all, we were living on nonsense, the housing market and the rest of it. And so it collapses, allowing a redistribution of wealth. Unfortunately, the way it's being redistributed now is not necessarily in favor of the working man.
Right. It's going the other way.
Exactly. Because they deplanetized Pluto. Now, again, I'm not saying that astrology, how can I put this? Astrology is never wrong. Astrologers, on the other hand, can be terrible.
That's right.
But astrology is never wrong. If you look at the combination of things, you will get it. You'll understand it if you know what the planets mean. And when I combined, when I added this all up, I saw exactly what we were heading towards. And the crash was only an excuse, frankly, to steal more. Billions and billions of dollars giving to banks who now want to charge you $5 for using your debit card because they can't steal it from us any other way. And this will continue until the society finally snaps.
They want to charge you to take your own money out of your own bank account.
Right.
Doesn't make
any
sense.
I use a debit card now on my Chase card. I think they're charging me $3 or $5 a month. I think it's $3 and Bank of America's $5 a month. It's ridiculous. It's just ridiculous. You don't have a fighting chance in the society the way it's set up right now. So something had to give. So what happened was a tremendous crash. Trillions of dollars in paper money disappeared. There's still more money than there ever was in the world, but it's in the hands of very few people. And again, that's the deplanetization of Pluto while these intense aspects are going on. This is not going to settle down, George, until at least 2015. That's when Uranus and Pluto are, 2016. That's when they're done squaring and opposing our sun. America's son.
So no matter who gets elected in 2012, whoever it is, they're going to have a tough time.
It's going to be a mess. They're going to have a terrible time. A lot of my friends kind of wish a Republican would be so that they would take the blame. But, I'm a little scared of what a 4-year Republican House, Senate, and the White House would do.
Yeah, you never want to give one party in total control of everything.
Not really.
You don't. Now, you have to have some checks and balances here.
That's why they invented it the way they did. Look, our founding fathers were some of the brightest people that ever lived, and they all lived at the same time.
Yep.
Really, a moment in history that, the geniuses and the number of geniuses that you could name, and they put together a government that can work if we'll allow it to. I don't think that the half of our country wants it to.
Tell me a little bit about your work in health astrology.
Oh, I love it. It's a sad thing at times, but the body is very well represented by the chart. I've diagnosed many things, cancer quite a number of times, sometimes in time to help and sometimes not.
Cancer that they would get or cancer that they already had and didn't know about it?
Either. I had one dear friend, Alex, who was an astrologer himself, but he came to me for a health read. And I told him, I said, he was going to Europe, and I said to him, you better get your colon checked out first. You have some growths in there. And I saw how bad it was in all of his charts, his secondary progress chart, his solar arc directed chart. And I knew it was cancer, and it had spread. And the doctors told him that if he went to Europe with his wife, he would have bled to death. And at least he got another year of life out of it. But it was a very sad time. It was too late for me to do anything for him or for the doctors. I've also diagnosed, you know, heart problems, kidney problems, advanced endometriosis, hidden infections, all kinds of things. And in advance. You see, I if I can talk about the book for 1 second,
yeah.
What I tried to do...
And by the way, it's a novel. That's that was puzzling to me. So explain that, too.
I teach astrology, and a lot of my students would like me to write an astrology book. I do my newsletters, and I do a lot of articles, but I never did. And I wanted to put my effort into a novel for several reasons. For one, if I write an astrology book, the only people who are going to read it are astrologers.
Probably.
And I want people to understand what astrology is capable of. So by putting it in a novel form, throughout the book, David Lowell, my detective, uses astrology in a number of different ways for the case and not for the case as well, in the day-to-day, the way that I would use it. And that gives me an opportunity to show people that astrology can be used and to do it in a novel form. First of all, a lot of people will read it who like mystery books. They may not like astrology, but they might be turned on to it. And they might say, my God, can it really do this and that and this and that? And the answer is yes. There's a bit of with gambling in there, for example. A girl has a gambling problem. I've had tremendous success picking moments to gamble. Won $30,000 on the number because solar arc directed Uranus was on top of my Venus.
Really?
The same number came in twice in a week, $15,000 each time.
Hmm.
So all of these things that I use in the novel are legitimate uses of astrology that I myself use. I didn't have to stretch it at all. I only, you know, at times to fit the plot or whatever. But I wanted people to read it as a novel, and I've gotten quite a number of responses. And it's been very well reviewed, by the way. I've gotten 12 or so rave reviews so far. I'm just thrilled. I hope it continues.
You might have a movie here, Mitchell.
Well, that's what we're hoping for. My agent, that's her job. She's got to get that movie deal or a TV something. It's a series, too. It's on Poison Pen Press, which is a wonderful little company out of Phoenix. And they've contracted me for another book, same characters, of course. And we're hoping to extend it out, and I hope that it becomes a series. And some of the reviewers have pointed out how exciting it is to be spoon-fed the astrology. I don't want to shove it down people's throats. I want them to read it as a book. And then there's two paragraphs of astrology that explain something. Then we go back to the plot again.
Yeah, you kind of just meld it right in there, huh?
Yeah. I didn't want to force it. And it worked so beautifully. Of course, it took quite a number of years to write it and get it edited and whatnot. But it works beautifully because the astrology, well, I have the years of experience and I can do it right, but it also doesn't interfere with the plot. You know, you read Tom Clancy and he gives you, you know, 5 pages on how to build a nuclear bomb. And you move ahead till you get back to Jack Ryan and you want to read what's what. You know? And I'm more interested that they enjoy the plot and that the astrology just kind of seeps in. And maybe it'll titillate some people to say, Jesus, let me get a reading or let me see what this is about or I'll study it a little bit. Maybe a few of them will become astrologers. I love astrology, George. It's the most wonderful thing, with the possible exception of jazz, that I've ever discovered.
It's a passion for you. Are there things out there that could change our events? You know, anything in the universe? Could a comet change an event or something like that astrologically?
Well, change an event. Not quite sure.
Well, I mean, if you predict another stock market crash, can right. something else influence that and not let that happen?
I suppose, but when I do my studies, I try to include everything, all the information that is available.
That you know. So no surprises.
Right. If something's not available, that's why it takes so long to, it's so much work. I look at hundreds of charts. If it wasn't for computers, my God, I started doing this with a slide rule and a ruler. I couldn't possibly get the number of charts drawn up in a day that I look at now.
I used to do baseball averages when I was a kid of all the players with a slide rule.
Yeah.
Same thing.
Now I got a little calculator. Boom, it's done.
It's easy.
Oh, well, look, there are some good changes that are happening, too. I'm not a pessimist. I'm a little concerned about where our culture is going. And I think we have some pretty hard times ahead of us. And I won't kid anybody in my newsletter or in an interview or anywhere else. I think we got an awful lot of aggravation coming along.
But why with predictions, though, Mitchell, whether they're astrological or intuitive from a psychic, why are they always gloomy? I mean, you said you're positive, I'm positive, but every prediction I see is based on a catastrophe, a terrorist attack, an economic collapse. How come these predictions don't say, we're going to have a great 3 years? This is going to be fun for everybody. How come they don't do that?
Well, because nobody would pay to hear those kind of predictions.
I would.
Have a great time.
I want to be given a good prediction that things are great.
Well, like I said, I am by nature an optimist, even though there is doom and gloom sometimes in my newsletters and whatnot. I think we have a tremendous potential here to make this catastrophe, this economic catastrophe, work to our advantage. The only way that anybody lets go of power is if they're forced to. And very few people control an awful lot in this society. They weren't going to let go of it until they got, their asses handed to them, as Bank of America did and some of the others did. And they're not done. I think Bank of America may actually be done.
Tell Warren Buffett that.
I know. I don't get his investment there, to tell you the truth, unless he just wants to own it.
He knows something. He knows something we don't, I guess. I don't know. He's going to pump more money into it.
Look, when it comes to something like that, the information that someone like Buffett brings to the table should be seen in the charts. It should not be extraneous. Whereas something like a comet that you're talking about, or something that is unknown or unforeseen, that may have some effect on the astrology simply because it's not a known factor.
Well, and Buffett's not shooting from the hip. He's got a whole army of people, recommending things to him.
I know. This man is a very, very smart and very aware individual. He sees what's happening in the society. When I see him on his interviews, and he says, "Of course, tax me. What are you crazy? That's ridiculous. You have to." he's a bright man, and he understands also that the bottom line is, if you have money in your wallet, you're not going to hit me over the head and take mine. Whereas if the society starts to crumble around, what difference does it make how rich you are? You won't be able to leave your house.
Well, one of the things, though, it doesn't put into effect. Somebody says, all right, that person makes $200,000 a year. Tax the heck out of them. But what if that person is helping six families or something like that and gets no benefit financially from that? Can't write it off. Can't do that. And if you tax that person who makes that kind of money at that rate, he can't help those people anymore.
I agree. And I also think $200,000 is not a lot of money these days.
Well, it is to the government.
Yes,
so.
I know.
Mitchell, we've got a couple minutes before the top of the hour, but I want to come back and take phone calls with our listeners for you. And I also want you to go on record with things in the future, in things that you see, things that are out there. Tell me again, Murder in the 11th House, and where do you get this book?
Well, it's published by Poisoned Pen Press. You can get it from them. It's also, of course, on Amazon, and Barnes & Noble, and in low indie bookstores. It's pretty much everywhere. They're really doing a heck of a job promoting it for me. They've been just wonderful, wonderful. They put a PR gal on it, and she's doing great work, getting me wonderful reviews. And you can get it anywhere, pretty much. It's out there.
Is this your first book?
Yeah, it's the first novel that I've managed to sell.
Did you have fun doing it?
I had a great deal of fun writing it. Editing was a big pain.
Oh, editing's tough. I've got an editor in New York.
I have a genius editor, Carl Leonard, who was at HarperCollins. He's just a wonderful, wonderful man, and he took a shining to it, and we worked like dogs on it. You know, it's just, we really, really edited the hell out of it. And it's a nice little tight book, and I'm very happy with the way it turned out.
Mine lives with a red pen.
Yes.
All right, we're going to talk about the future in just a second with Mitchell Lewis. We're going to take your phone calls as we talk about astrology and astrological events. His website, by the way, is MitchAstro.com. I'm George Norrie, back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM.